Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the GNSO Review Working Party call on the 16th of September 2015. On the call today, we have Jen Wolfe, Jennifer Standiford, Bill Drake, Edward Morris, Avi Doria, Rafik Damak, Amiral Sadir, Chuck Gomes, and Arun Sukumar. Our guest speakers today are Richard Westlake and Colin Jackson. We received no apology for today's call. From staff, we have Larissa Gernick, Marika Koenigs, Mary Wong, Linda Saint-Géry, Charles Assembly, Karen Mulberry, and myself, Natalie Perkin. I'd like to remind you all to please state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you ever so much, and over to you, Jen.
Thank you so much, and thanks for everybody for joining the call, and particularly for Richard and Colin. I know it's the middle of the night for you, so we certainly appreciate you accommodating everyone else's schedule today. If we could go ahead and move to the agenda slide, I'll just briefly touch on what we're going to cover today, and then we can move right into the discussion. Great, thank you. So we're going to start today. Richard is going to give us an update on the final reports, changes that incorporated public comments and comments from our working party. He's going to take us through that. Then what we'd like to move into is talking about how we as a working party can prioritize the recommendations that have been made so that we can look at moving forward into implementation. We want to look at aligning those recommendations with anything that is currently underway or being worked on in the community. We want to talk a little bit about the feasibility of the implementation of the recommendations and then our next steps as we move toward the Dublin meeting and moving the process forward. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Richard, to present your final report.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you, everybody. And Colin and I are here probably for the final time. So good morning, good afternoon, everybody. If we could perhaps please move to the slide that has GNSO Review Working Party meeting, Richard Westlake, final report. This is the first slide. Here, what we're planning to talk about are these five topics. First of all, the final version of our report has been posted to ICANN's website, as I'm sure you've all had a chance to see. What we're going to just talk briefly about is the process from the draft for public comment, what has happened since then during ICANN 53, our consideration of that, and the final version that you now have in front of you. I'll highlight the main changes we've made and where you can reference those and have a look at those and the rationale behind them. I'll talk very briefly about how you can now start to measure the effectiveness of the recommendations we've made. We've put a tentative document together that we'll cover in a minute, and then it's going to be open for questions, discussion, and the agenda then becomes yours. So if we could move, if I could ask you first of all whether you've had a chance to do so yet or whether you do so in the next few days. For those who haven't been following the changes over the last few weeks, please read at least the report summary, section one. It's only 12 pages, and the recommendations grouped under the themes in the annex to the report summary, under the four themes that we have talked about, and that covers four pages because those have been slightly modified. And what we'll be talking about also this morning is some of the rationale, some of where you can reference the thinking, the discussion behind that. So may we move to the next slide, please. Thank you. So this highlights the first lot of changes we've made in response to the public comment period. I think what's really quite noticeable over the last a few weeks has been how valuable that public comment period has been, because we did receive quite a considerable amount of feedback, public comment, both directly through the site, through the ICANN GNSO site, which was there for people to comment on, and also during the many meetings that we attended and less formal feedback we received during ICANN 53 in Buenos Aires. So what that's led to is we still have 36 recommendations, as we did in the public draft. We've clarified several of them, partly in response to questions about what we were referring to, partly to try to make them clearer and partly to make them more succinct. We have added one totally new recommendation, which is the new recommendation 23, which has come as a direct result of the public comment. The rationale for that can be found in section 7 from pages 91 and onwards, and that refers to the makeup of seats at the GNSO Council. We've also strengthened recommendation 13, which is the specific technology solution. You'll find that one in section 5, where we the section called Revise the PDP on page 60 and following. And that one talks specifically about one technology that we're aware of, Lumio. If that were to be adopted, we believe there are something like 12 of our other recommendations which would essentially become superfluous. They should transform how working groups can complete their work. They would be a huge aid, we consider, to participation and allow for much broader representation by people who don't have to listen, don't easily listen, to English spoken, especially by English from a non-natural English speaker. And I understand there are some questions coming shortly. Could I suggest we cover them at the very end? Because I won't be too much longer, probably about another 5 to 10 minutes, and then we can take them as we go from there. So we've regrouped our recommendations within the four themes that we talked about in the draft, and as you'll see, the majority fall within the first two, particularly under participation and representation, which is by far the most important emerging theme that we have. There are 17 recommendations there. There are now 11 under the topic of continuous development, 6 under transparency, and 2 under alignment with ICANN's future, exactly as we had in the draft. And just for those who are wondering what happened to it, given that we do have a new recommendation, the old recommendations 23 and 24 have now been combined into a single recommendation, so we haven't lost those. May I have the next slide, please? In addition to those specifics, we have revised the report summary, the section I've recommended that you read. We have clarified and expanded a little bit on our methodology just to address some of the concerns, the issues, and the points that have been raised on several occasions, particularly in relation to how we have used some of the survey data. And we have revised the section at the end, our section 9 on the changing environment. One of the particular points that we've done there is to reference the ALEC R3 white paper from 2012, which was titled Making ICANN Relevant, Responsive and Respected. And that, we think, goes very much to the heart of exactly what we were talking about in a large part of our report. And it's quite interesting to see that we are far from the first people to have raised this point. So, as I said, all of this has demonstrated to us the value of the public feedback, public comment period, and much of the feedback that we received. May I have the next slide, please? So, we have also prepared a brief, informal, separate document, and Larissa, I'm not sure whether you have circulated this yet. This is a one-pager which we have called Potential Indicators of Success, where we have put together a few provisional bullet points which we consider that you might want to add and start to convert them into measurable KPIs, critical success factors, or measures to assess against. The reason we did that is because, as you see, part of our terms of reference required us to comment on the effectiveness of previous reviews. Because there were none of these critical success factors or measures in any of those, it was very hard to assess the effectiveness other than to just simply apply judgment and to look at the evidence of what had happened. So we're offering this beyond our terms of reference, but we're offering this as at least a starter for you to identify some measures, some potential indicators of success, and we strongly have recommended that the review working party should consider and modify them to ensure that, where practicable, these measures are turned into quantifiable indicators, which would also include target dates. And could I please now just move to our next slide, which I think is our final slide. The process from here. Beyond today's meeting, we will be presenting our key findings briefly to the Organisation Effectiveness Committee of the Board in about 10 days' time. And from then and from here, the process is over to you. You have our review. You have our report. We recognise it is a fairly substantial document. We've tried to make navigation as easy as possible. We've tried to highlight the key points. And then for those who wish to go into it, you can read the full analysis and rationale. And for those who are complete masochists, we have also got a series of appendices with further data there as well. So thank you, Jen, and I'm very happy to receive questions.
Thank you, Richard. I know we already have a few questions forming in the chat, and I'm sure some others would probably like to be in the queue as well. Chuck, I know you had a question first and then Avery in the chat, so why don't we start with you, and then as others have questions, please go ahead and raise your hand in the Adobe Connect. But Chuck, do you want to proceed?
Thanks. This is Chuck speaking. I was really surprised by Recommendation 23. So I guess my first question is, was this ever discussed with the working party? Because it seemed to me we could have flagged some concerns on this that might have been helpful. It looks like it came out of the blue. I was just, since Richard, and thanks for pointing out page 91 and beyond on the rationale, and I was just trying to skim that, but frankly didn't do a good job. And I see some of Aubrey's question in the chat. It's a very good question. In my quick glance at the rationale, it looks like it was geared towards the NCSG. I'm not sure that's the right thing to do, but the recommendation is worded generically, so it doesn't say that. I'm going to need a lot more understanding to think that it can even work. It looks like it can't work as I look at Recommendation 23, and I think it's unfortunate that this has gone out as a recommendation. Now, maybe you can convince me that it could work. I have a long ways to go on that. So I guess my first general question is, was this vetted with the working party? And if not, why not? I certainly am not aware of any vetting of it. I think there are some serious problems with it, and maybe it's because I don't understand. But it looks really problematic just from a GNSO point of view. So I think it's one that will have huge amount of response when the board decides to act and seeks public comment. So let me stop there and let others talk, and maybe I'm just totally misunderstanding. I don't know.
So, Chuck, I'd like to have Richard answer it. Just to answer the first part, no, we didn't have any feedback on the revised recommendation, but we do have the opportunity to comment as we move this forward, particularly as we make recommendations on the implementation phase. But, Richard, why don't you respond to Chuck, and then if there's a follow-up, we can go from there.
Certainly. Look, Chuck, your point is absolutely valid. It hasn't had a chance to be discussed with the review working party. To us, if you like, it is part of the richness or the hazard of the public comment period, if you like. It was an issue that we discussed internally among ourselves at Westlake probably about 6 months ago, and then probably because of various other priorities that we were working on, we didn't incorporate it. But with the public comment period, with some of the specific feedback we received, and I have to say it was from more than one or two individuals, this became a fairly strongly emerging requirement in our mind. And when we went back and had a closer look at both the terms of reference, the constitutions of both the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group, we did find quite a considerable difference both in philosophies and current operation. Our view was that the process allowed for representation of, or had when the constituencies and the current structure was set up, had allowed for representation on the GNSO Council and indeed further beyond that, such as the NOMCOM, of every constituency and stakeholder group. Now, when a single new constituency was created, this didn't occur, and under the constitution of the NCSG, there was no process for doing so. If we looked at, in contrast, at the constitution of the commercial stakeholders group, that was quite specific that their seats, their six seats at the GNSO Council, would be allocated equally between the three constituencies within the stakeholder group. And for us, the philosophy was exactly the same. Our recommendation is not aimed specifically at the NCSG. It was aimed generically, but in reality, it reflects what the CSG, the Commercial Stakeholders Group, already does. It's only the two stakeholder groups in the non-contracted parties' house, of course, because the contracted parties' house doesn't have constituencies within it. It has the stakeholder group and then various interest groups. Our view was quite strongly, and we have argued that rationale, pages 91 onwards, our view was that this went to the core of the ability to gain representation. If this wasn't a part of the process, if constituencies and any new constituencies in either stakeholder group were not able to achieve such a voice, then it made the benefit of setting up a new constituency quite marginal. It meant that it would be much more difficult for them to get themselves established. By providing for equal seating between them, if you like, it would mean that they would automatically have a voice if they were admitted as a new constituency.
Chuck, I see your hand is up. Did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do. Well, first of all, I'm watching the chat, and some really good stuff is being said in the chat. But I want to focus on this from a GNSO perspective, not a stakeholder group perspective, which appears the rationale focus is on a stakeholder group perspective. The GNSO assigns seats according to stakeholder groups, not constituencies. So to suggest that that seats should be assigned according to equally by constituency is basically suggesting a restructure of the GNSO, which is out of scope. That's just from a GNSO perspective. I can go on and talk about the problems with the recommendation. You're right, Richard. The contracted party's house does not have constituencies right now, but they're allowed. They could happen. And then that would throw this thing into even more turmoil than I think is already happening for the non-contracted party house. So, I don't know what to say. I think you missed it on this one. I really do, and we'll just have to deal with it since the report has already gone public. But I haven't heard anything that convinces me that you didn't miss it on this one.
Richard, did you want to
reply? If I could reply briefly,
go ahead, please.
Look, I hear what Chuck says. We have listened to that. We anticipated that there would be a significant number of people who felt this had been just dumped in at the last minute. The reality is, from our perspective, is that if a group is admitted as a constituency, which we have, as you know, we've discussed at length, and demonstrated is a very high hurdle to achieve, then once that constituency is admitted, we believe quite strongly that actually they should have a voice, and that as far as possible, there is a number of seats provided to each stakeholder group that should allow them to have that voice once they become established. Otherwise, it's going to be almost an impossible task for them ever to get established. It is something that was raised, as I say, with us by a number of parties, and not only, I might say, not only by those parties who you might automatically consider might feel deprived at the moment, might feel excluded at the moment.
This is Chuck again, Richard. Thanks, but you really didn't respond to my point. I don't think anybody's arguing that a constituency should not have a voice. But you have recommended a structural change to the GNSO indirectly, and that was out of scope. Just putting all the problems with your recommendation aside, how do you respond to the fact that you recommended, the GNSO seating cannot fulfill that objective without a structural change, I don't believe. So, in essence, you have recommended a structural change, which you said in your report that a structural change you didn't think was needed, and yet you recommended one. So, I'm confused.
Chuck, thank you for that. Look, 2 points to that. First of all, we don't consider this represents a structural change. What we believe it would do would to represent a consequence if a structural change followed. If a structural change takes place, we would consider the admission of a new constituency, for example, certainly to be part of a structural change. We're not suggesting any new seating. We're not suggesting any new seating at the council. What we are suggesting is simply a potential reallocation of seats at the council based on the number of constituencies within each of the two stakeholder groups in the non-contracted parties house. The second point is also we didn't say that we don't consider that a structural change is necessary. In fact, what we've said is that we think it's quite likely that structural change will follow. That is not a part of our terms of reference, as you correctly point out. And as we have said in several places, we think that the structure, the form, should follow the function, but part of the function of the GNSO is representation and a voice, and that's the case that we've made. So if you want to argue that this is perhaps semantics, I would take issue with it. And as far as having a chance to go to the working party, I think in a way it is part of the consequence of the current the review process, that there is a review process. It does allow for public comment, and we're then left with the paradox, do we ignore the public comment if something significant emerges in our view, or do we include it and accept the fact that it doesn't have, if you like, the level of consultation that probably about 30 or 32 of our other recommendations have had. So, Chuck, I absolutely respect your thinking and your comments. But we thought long, hard, and very deeply about this and considered it before including it.
So this is Chuck again. Sorry for monopolizing. I absolutely don't think it's semantics. I guess I just come to the conclusion that you really don't fully understand the GNSO and its structure. And I also think that you just focused on what it looks like right now. If there changes occur with regard to constituencies anywhere, your approach doesn't work at all. So I'll stop there. I think I've made my points.
Look, Chuck, I understand what you're saying. I actually don't agree with you in terms of looking at the GNSO as it is right now. What we have specifically done, and we do talk about this point in quite some detail in the rationale there from pages 91 onwards, is we do talk about, if you like, both the practical and the arithmetic consequences if new constituencies were to arrive. And so the whole point was, we said that there is this mathematical arrangement of six and six in terms of the two non-contracted party house stakeholder groups. And what we have done is looked at the way that currently the commercial stakeholders group works. In our view, that is an appropriate way of doing it, because clearly the policy of the board is that there should be constituencies. We know that some members of the non-contracted, the non-commercial stakeholders group take issue with the fact that constituencies should have individual voices. Our view is that if people choose to set up a new constituency, it is not for others to dictate whether or not they should have a voice, and this really is one of the very few concrete ways in which they can do that. So we don't think it is a structural change. We think it is, if you like, a reflection of what the founding fathers of the current structure quite probably intended in setting up the current structure. Thank you. Again, I won't monopolize this particular part.
No, thank you. Bill, I see your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Well, this is quite an interesting experience again. The first version was released while we were in Singapore, and there was all kinds of stuff in it that was from the standpoint of people involved in the non-commercial space pretty offensive and required us to write a 10-page letter. And now here we have again the report pops out and is on the website, and we're done. And this stuff has been added that hasn't been vetted with this group or at all. And I'm really baffled by that on procedural grounds. But leaving that aside, I just want to say that there's a couple of really significant misrepresentations being made here that are just kind of, that I have to keep hearing it over and over. It starts to grate on me a little bit. I understand that there is a desire to argue for having hundreds of constituencies formed, and this somehow will solve everything. And perhaps that was the mandate from staff. We don't know. We did. One of our members did file a request for information about the contract involved here, but was denied. But in any event, the argument that having lots of constituencies definitely is going to be something that stimulates engagement, et cetera, just has not been borne out by evidence so far, number one. Number two, if you want to make that argument, you have to make it above board. When the papers has things like this, page 89, you say, at the NCUC meeting, a former chair, you're referring to Milton Mueller, of NCUC, explained that NCUC has never accepted that multiple constituencies were necessary or desirable. If you go back and look at that transcript, because I was kind of puzzled when I saw that, he was telling you what we were thinking in 2011 when the discussion was being had with the members of the Structural Improvements Committee about how to organize voting and so on within the NCSG. And the argument was, why are you dividing up civil society into little silos and so on? That was an argument that was put forward years ago. It has since been the case that we've had multiple constituencies. We've learned to live with them. We've worked together in the NCSG to adopt policy statements and so on. And nobody in NCUC is running around not saying that there should not be other constituencies. And yet, because you are maintaining that that's the case, then you construct this narrative that makes it sound like we are hostile. A view such as was expressed by the former chair serves to exacerbate existing structural hurdles to creating a new constituency, and they'll face a biased reception by the NCUC-dominated NCSG. This is all purely your own interpretive dance going on here, which is not based on any reality. It's not based on any knowledge of how we interact, how we work in the NCSG, what our views are, or anything else. It is constructing a story that suits your purpose. And I don't understand why you expect that people would be okay with that. It's just not, it is not from the standpoint of, as an academic who reads work, I mean, just methodologically, I would flunk somebody who gave me a paper like this. So I just absolutely gobsmacked that you've done this again to us. And so now we have to waste a whole lot of time going back to the board and everybody else and trying to explain to them why this report is absolutely cockamamie in some of its conclusions. And this is not a good process that we followed here. So I'm just really aghast, and I don't understand why all this is necessary. We are not tied up in this little hell that you represent, where the constituencies are at war with each other. We don't spend our time thinking about these things. We're writing statements in reply to the IANA transition and accountability and human rights. We're doing real work on GNSO issues. That's our job. That's what we do as volunteers on volunteer time. And right now, all we're getting is this effort to beat the hell out of us on baloney grounds. It's absolutely mind-boggling. Unprofessional. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Amar, I see your hand is up, but let me see if Richard wants to respond to that first, if that's okay.
Thank you, Jen. Thank you very much indeed. Look, I hear everything that is being said. I'm also reading what is being said in the chat room. If I could respond firstly just to a couple of Bill's points. Firstly, no, we are not talking about a desire for hundreds of new constituencies. We are, however, trying to create an environment in which it is feasible and practicable and achievable that should a new constituency or a few new constituencies be admitted, that they find a way of participating on an equal basis, an equal footing with the current constituencies that are there. We've noted that there are 6 seats in each council, in each stakeholder group. Now, that allows for the creation of several new constituencies. On the record of the last few years, we don't believe that is going to be a constraint. There are 6. They can be allocated. We've suggested ways in which they could be allocated. Secondly, I take quite strong issue with the question, the loaded question, was this a requirement of staff? Absolutely not. This is our initiative, Bill. All our recommendations are our initiative. We own them. We have proposed them ourselves, and we strongly resist any recommendation that we had them dictated to us. Thank you, Jen.
Thanks. Amar, please go ahead.
Thanks, Jen. This is Amar. Thank you, Richard, for being on the call today. One question I posted earlier in the chat, and I've been kind of keeping an eye on this list, just waiting to see whether there would be a review with the Working Party members of the public comments presented to the last report, and there wasn't one. So I'm just wondering why the Working Party members were not involved. This might have been helpful, having this sort of community representation in the review of the public comments to sort of catch those little things that Chuck mentioned earlier were missed. I haven't had a chance to look at the final report yet. It was just posted yesterday, I believe. I was just looking at page 91 and 92 right now, and it's immediately spotted a mistake of the history of MPOC members serving on the GNSO Council. So it's just little things like that could have been avoided and maybe painted a clearer picture. And maybe some of the members, for example, from NCSG could have helped the folks from Westlake to understand why we believe some of the recommendations and rationale don't work. So I'm just curious why the Working Party members were not involved in the review of the public comments. But my next point is we just had an election round. We just completed an election round in the non-commercial stakeholder group, and we had a turnout of over 250 members who voted in this election, and we have three councillors who are going to begin serving a new term, as well as a new non-commercial stakeholder group chair. But when I look at the recommendations, like recommendation 23 in the report, it seems to me that the Westlake team seems to think that these elections aren't actually representative of the non-commercial stakeholder group members, and in order for this representation to improve, that we need to have council seats allocated to the different constituencies, whether they're just the two constituencies now or more in the future. But I find it really hard to reconcile that with what just happened in the elections these past couple of weeks. How are we supposed to take this back to our members and tell them, okay, the folks you just elected are not representative of you? And I'm asking this question keeping in mind that we do also have members, and we may have more and more members in the future who are members of the non-commercial stakeholder group but not members of any of the constituencies of the non-commercial stakeholder group. So how do you factor, and I believe this point was made clear to the Westlake team on numerous occasions, so how would you also reconcile them in the idea of constituency seats on council as opposed to stakeholder group-wide seats? Who's supposed to represent those few members who are not members of any of the constituencies? Thanks.
Richard, do you want to respond to that?
Yes, I think...
Particularly the last part, Jen, that I think is the specific question.
Yeah. Thank you. Jen, if I could just answer a couple of points of Amar's there. First of all, part of the feedback you have, I think, access to the full Excel spreadsheet, which does refer to the... That was the formal feedback we received. We also received a lot of further feedback during the Buenos Aires meeting, where we came and met with a lot of both constituencies, stakeholder groups, and individuals. As far as the substance here, which is in addition to perhaps some of the written formal feedback, and we did agree that that would also be included in our consideration, otherwise there had not been a lot of point in attending Buenos Aires. Going to the other point, and particularly some of the chat comments coming through, again, there would be a reallocation among existing constituencies. We have recommended a process by which the seats would be allocated if there is a number that isn't divisible into six. But what we're saying is that each, in our view, each constituency does require a voice in order to have any form of equality of standing. We looked at the options of one option we did consider was whether to allocate a minimum of one seat to any new constituency, and you will see that our rationale around that in 91-92 and why we did make the conclusion we did. We don't believe that any solution potentially is perfect. We certainly consider on the basis of the evidence that we've seen, the history we have, I accept the fact that there may be an historic error in one or two points, but I think they're minor and I don't think they go to the substance or particularly to the principle that we're referring to, which is about representation and participation. And I could acknowledge that, although we did check it as far as we were able to in practice. We do believe that this is the least problematic of the outcomes. We're not suggesting it should lead to massive change. In fact, at the moment, it would lead to only one change, and it would require a new constituency to be admitted, which in itself is a fairly significant movement or change, before it would require any further change in the allocation of council seats. Thank you, Jen. It might be productive, if you wanted to ask to look at whether there are any other aspects of this final report.
Absolutely. I was just going to comment on that. I know we're scheduled until the top of the hour, and I know this is an important issue, and that's why I wanted to let everyone have a chance to talk. And Rafiq has been waiting in the queue, so I would like to give him a chance to speak. But then I would like to move on and talk a little bit about some of the other recommendations. There's 36 recommendations I know from reviewing the public comments. Many of those there was widespread agreement on. Some require additional conversation. And what we wanted to get to today was really talking about what we do as next steps. Chuck has mentioned that we could have a formal response, and I think that would be appropriate. So, Rafiq, let me let you finish up your thought, and then I'd like to move the conversation forward if we can.
Okay. Thanks, Jen. I'm sorry if I look tired or angry. It's almost midnight here. It's not, I think, the best way to spend time, however. So, as I speaking as my experience as NCAZ chair, Taking the example of CAG is kind of, I find it maybe can be misleading. As a chair, I have to work with them, like, I mean, in the non-contracted party house. And trust me, I can find a problem to know who I should contact there, because they are working at constituency level, so it's not easy to see how they are working as stakeholder group. They don't have a chair, so which make a lot of difficulties to liaise, to work on, to build consensus, and so on. While at NCAG, having the SG level really working in terms of policy making, and I can send you the link of our latest comments for 2015 only. It's more than 10. We try to respond to most of the comments, and we work it at NCAG to make that, to make really policy to participate. I think the emphasis in constituency rise a lot of, it's a flawed idea, because you are thinking about constituency and you forget about the most important entity in the whole thing. It's about the community. It's the members. The members of the stakeholder group who can join a constituency or they cannot join a constituency. And we should talk about direct democracy, and that's the case, because they participate in general election in NCAG to elect their councillor, regardless to which constituency they are part. If we have even 7, 10, 20 constituency within NCAG, and having the current model where the election for the council seat is done at the NCSG level, there is much more representation and diversity, because it's the real direct democracy. It's the members they can elect. It's not because directed by the constituency they are part of, they can select which councillor they want to put. It's as Amar said, we have more like 235 members between individuals and organizations who voted last time. Please try to find the same members in other stakeholder group. You won't find this easily. So you are denying by you what you are suggesting to members who are the real entity we need to care about. You are denying their right to select. You are just creating silo. You are not, proving any effectiveness of your model. You are creating artificial model to do some allocation. As a computer engineer, I am surprised that you have such logic. It's so fluid. It is not going to work because it's so artificial. So, I mean, you emphasize it. I mean, I found 40 mention of NCAG, and I didn't find a real argument to explain your recommendation. You made a recommendation and you created some reality to fit with it. So I understand maybe you will be in defensive, Richard, but please take this comment, because we are the folks who are in the front. And I have been in the NCAG and NCAC since 2009. I'm getting really tired of this stuff. We should not, as volunteers, spend time to talk about structure. We want to do policy, and we try to engage people. Trust me, it's so complicated to explain to explain to everyone outside ICANN what we have, NCAG, NCUC, and MPOC. No normal human being can understand. And you want to create more constituency? Please, let's go ahead, and we will see how much it will be fun for people to explain that. Thanks.
Thank you. Richard, I know you have your hand up. I want to make sure we talk about some of our next steps. We've only got about 10 or 12 minutes left in the call. Did you want to respond to that?
Thank you, Jen. If I could just respond very quickly to Rafiq. No, I don't believe that we are responding defensively to what you're saying. Your point about democracy, about 200 and something people voting, I think is precisely one of the issues we've raised, that what this would do is, in terms of allowing representation for what several people have described as civil society, this would, the current system gives strong preference to organizations, to a large number of organizations consisting either of individuals or of small numbers of people. What it fails to recognize is that...
Richard, I need to interrupt you here. We have more than 160 organizations. So please stop this bullshit about individuals matters more than other organizations. We have many organizations, more than 100. So please have numbers. Please have numbers or not. Because with due respect, if you are in academic area, I am a former PhD student, your report is going nowhere because you are not putting numbers, real stats. You are just saying some stuff. So we have, please check again. We have more than 160 organizations. You are talking about the large. Can you have this number of the large organization? Because we can spend a lot of time to discuss about that, and we can spend really a lot of time about this. So please be careful of what you are saying here. So,
if I could please finish what I was saying, Rafiq, thank you for that interruption. We have noted that the one of the constituencies in the SCSG does consist of a large number of organizations. Many of those organizations, from what we have been able to discover, are very small organizations. The other constituency in this stakeholder group, and this is my point, the other constituency consists of a relatively small number, but of organizations which in many cases represent in each of their own instances, many hundreds or in some cases potentially many thousands or even tens of thousands of members. And this, to our point, is the point that we're trying to raise, that democracy is not just about the front end of numbers of individuals, where a large number of small organizations inevitably is going to carry a greater weight of voting than a small number of what are potentially very large organizations.
Richard, you are wrong, because we have weighted voting, which means that small and large organizations have much weight voted than the individuals. So that's what you are forget to say about. And if I understand you are denying to people to have the right to vote. We have weighted vote to differentiate between individuals, between small and large organizations. We can maybe spend more time to discuss about that, but please be careful of what you are stating. And I don't see any number, because you are saying large organization. Can you give us example of this large organization? Because several of them are both in the constituency. So please be careful of the what you are stating as facts. You can state facts, but you cannot make your own facts. So thanks.
So it's we're coming up towards the top of the hour, and I want to try to bring this to a productive conclusion on where we go next. Clearly, everybody is very concerned about this change in Recommendation 23. If you could pull up the last slide with the timeline, I want to talk about the next steps in what happens with the review and what we can do to respond to these issues. If you could go all the way to the last slide, the timeline. So the next phase here is Westlake will be presenting to the Organizational Effectiveness Committee on September 28th, which is in a little less than 2 weeks. I think Chuck had noted in the chat, and I agree, if we want to have an official response from the working party, even though that is a short time to turn this around, I think we should try to create something specifically on that. I also do just want to note there were 36 recommendations. This is one that's obviously a controversial one that we'll want to formally respond to. But there were many other recommendations that, as I reviewed the public comments, there seemed to be widespread consensus that those were good recommendations. So I don't want to lose sight of that as an opportunity for us as the working party to come together and try to make recommendations on how those things could move forward, because I think there were a lot of recommendations that there was widespread consensus and agreement on. But since this is a time-sensitive issue to respond to the OEC by the 28th, I'd like to just get some comments on how you all would like to move forward. Do we want to have an official response? What are the suggestions on how we respond at this point to this particular issue, since I know it's so important to everyone? Are there new hands? Are those new hands? Rafiq, was that a new hand for you in the chat? Richard, is that a new hand for you?
Look, Dan, I think we're possibly past it now, but if I could just raise one point, which is that I was trying to conclude. I just wanted to point out to Rafiq that we have indeed considered the weighted voting. We looked at that, we looked at the mathematics of it, and we have commented on that in the text. We understand that there is a lot of unease with the recommendation we've raised. We thought about it long and hard. I would say only in conclusion that it is our recommendation. These are recommendations. The working party now has to take this forward and put into action those which we consider, or those which it considers are of value to it. All we would suggest in parting is that we don't think it is a smorgasbord. We do consider that it is a combined set of recommendations. The four themes we hope help, and we believe overall that if people step back and consider what we've recommended and put them all in the context of the reality, that we hope that there is value there. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you, Richard. And I'm just watching in the chat. Is it everyone's opinion we should schedule another call as quickly as possible so we can discuss a formal response, particularly with an emphasis on Recommendation 23? And then I think we will have some more time to look at some of these others. Certainly we would want to be able to provide our recommendations and prioritizing these recommendations on what we think should move forward into implementation prior to the OEC meeting in Dublin. Is there a consensus that we need to schedule another call as quickly as possible, and does everyone have the time and the commitment to do so? Is there any support for having another time, no commitment? Yes, okay. Thank you. So is everyone in agreement then? We'll send out a doodle poll immediately to try to get something scheduled so that we can formulate a response. Okay, so I'm not seeing any negative comments to that. So I will ask Sharla, I think she's on, if we can go ahead and send out a doodle poll following this call, we'll work on getting another call scheduled as quickly as possible to move the discussion forward. And I do just want to comment again, obviously this is the priority issue that we need to focus on, particularly with the OEC meeting on the 28th. But what I'd like to suggest is that after we address that issue, then we do schedule another call to move forward and talk about the other recommendations, be able to prioritize those based upon where, you know, particularly ones where there was widespread consensus that people thought it was a good idea, that we look at how we move those forward and be able to continue on into implementation so that we utilize these recommendations fully. So I realize we're at the top of the hour, so I think we'll proceed unless anyone else has another comment with sending out a doodle poll. And actually, I'll go ahead and ask Charlotte, why don't we schedule two calls, one to get as soon as possible so we can have a response by September 28th, and then a second doodle poll so that we could have a follow-up call to discuss the other recommendations.
Thanks, Jen. Anyone else? I'll do that.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Robin, what is the – oh, Robin's asking the question, what was the cost of the recommendations? Do we – I don't know, staff. Larissa, do we have that information, or can we circulate what the cost was? Okay, I'm not hearing Larissa, so maybe she's not there. Okay, Robin, we'll try to get an answer to that question for you. Okay, well, I think if there are no other hands in the queue, then we'll go ahead and bring this call to a close, and we'll get our follow-up call scheduled as quickly as possible. Thank you, everybody, for the conversation today. It was an important conversation. Thank you to Richard and Colin. I know it's the middle of the night for you. We appreciate you being responsive to all of the questions. And we'll get another call and move this forward as expeditiously as we can. Thank you. Let's go ahead and bring the meeting to a close.
Thank you very much, Elise. You may now stop the recording as this concludes today's call.